On Friday morning, Pope Benedict is due to depart from Rome's Fiumicino airport, headed for the Jordanian capital, Amman, at the start of his week-long journey to the Holy Land. He'll be spending the first 3 days there in Jordan, visiting the biblical sites of Mount Nebo, from where Moses first looked out across the Promised Land, and Bethany beyond the River Jordan, where Jesus is believed to have been baptized by John the Baptist. On Monday, the Pope is scheduled to fly on to Tel Aviv and spend a couple of days visiting the holy sites in Jerusalem, such as the Western Wall, the Dome of the Rock, and the Upper Room where Jesus celebrated the Last Supper with his disciples. On Wednesday, he crosses the separation barrier dividing Jerusalem from the West Bank for a Mass in Bethlehem's Manger Square, a visit to the Caritas Baby Hospital there, and a tour of the nearby Aida refugee camp. On Thursday, then, the Pope travels up to Galilee to meet with Christians in Nazareth and celebrate Mass near the Basilica of the Annunciation. And then on Friday, he concludes this journey with visits to the Orthodox and Armenian patriarchs in Jerusalem and a moment of prayer in the Basilica of the Holy Sepulchre. A packed agenda, then, and one which the media will, of course, be scrutinising for political overtones. Sean-Patrick Lovett will be travelling on the papal plane and reporting for us throughout this journey. He joins me now in studio for a look at some of the key issues the Pope will be focusing on in his many meetings with religious and political leaders in the region. So, Sean, Pope Benedict has been telling us ahead of this trip that he's going as a pilgrim of peace and unity to the Holy Land. That's an incredibly ambitious, some perhaps would even say utopian goal, isn't it, in this land which has found it so hard to break out of the cycle of violence and oppression.
It's more than ambitious, it's more than utopian, it's actually courageous insofar as, and it's important to remember, you know, that this trip was organised, or they started organising this trip last year before the invasion of Gaza, before the whole situation blew up, inverted commas, all over again. And so it was precisely the situation where you could say at that stage, after December, oh, well, you know, let's put this off, and maybe it's not the right time. And I think, you know, if the decision had been left to me, that's exactly what I would have said. But the fact of confirming this trip, I think there is an element of courage in that. I'm a little disappointed when I go to all the briefings and so forth, and I hear the inevitable, I suppose, politicizing that goes on around this trip. Of course, there's a political element. You know, you can't go into that area without bringing politics into it. But we also can't lose sight of the fact that it is a pilgrimage. He's a pope, first of all. He's not going there because he needs to get more votes to be re-elected next time round. He's not going there to sign contracts for building roads and bridges and oil ducts. He's there because he feels, as pope, as a religious leader, he needs to be there, and he needs to be there at this time.
There have been voices even among the Christian communities, though, haven't there, that have expressed doubt about the timing of this visit. We heard Fuad Twal, the patriarch, say the same thing.
No, I smile, excuse me, because you say there have been Christian voices. I mean, in the last few weeks, there have been voices from left, right, centre, up, down, every which way. It seems everybody has got to have their tuppence halfpenny, we used to say, and what that translates into is euro. But everyone has had to have their say. And of course, you can't please all the people all the time. And so at a certain stage, you do what you think is good and right, the best thing to do at the time. And that's what I believe he's doing. I also think there's something wonderfully prophetic about it. It's one thing to squabble and discuss and have disagreements and misunderstandings, because that's the big word, isn't it? That's the subtext. Have misunderstandings with your neighbours, whether they be Muslims or Jews or Orthodox or Melkites or Chaldeans or whoever they may be. It's a whole difference. It's one thing to discuss your differences over the wall or across the fence. It's a whole other thing to go into their sitting rooms and sit down with them at table and say, right, you know, now let's talk about it. Let's try and understand each other better. And that's where I see the whole prophetic aspect, the fact of crossing the boundary, breaking down the wall, breaking down the fence, going and sitting down in their situations and trying to come to some kind of better understanding. And I think that's what he means when he uses words like peace and reconciliation.
So, of course, the focus between the three great faiths will be one of the main issues on this agenda, and one of the main subjects he'll be tackling, won't it? The whole question of interfaith dialogue.
Well, that's where we're going. We're going to the Holy Land. I mean, yes, the country, it's interesting, again, it's a political statement, yes, I know. We're going to three countries. And the organizers have been saying this from the start. We're going to three countries called Jordan and Israel and the Palestinian territories. But before we visit the three countries, we're going to an area called the Holy Land. And we believe that this is the place where Jesus walked the earth. This is where it happened. And we're going to look and touch and be in these places. And it's an opportunity to exchange and talk and listen to the people who live there, and no matter what religious community they belong to.
There will be inevitable comparisons, won't there, with Pope John Paul's visit there in the year 2000, again, in the footsteps of the apostles, the fathers of the church, and Jesus himself. How do you think this is going to perhaps distinguish itself from that previous visit?
They're inevitable comparisons that are going to be made, also because he's going to be doing many of the things that John Paul II did. He's going to go onto Mount Nebo, stand where John Paul II stood, looking out over the Promised Land. He's going to go to the Wailing Wall and place his prayer in the wall, exactly as John Paul II did. But there are, yes, it's a different, apart from the fact that it's a very different political climate. The situation was much more hopeful when John Paul II was there in terms of peace and reconciliation in the Holy Land. It's much uglier, more complex, more difficult now. So there's that political context that is totally different. But there are aspects of the trip that are different. John Paul II never performed a public mass when he was there in 2000. It seems very strange. I mean, we have very short memories. We're so used to seeing images of John Paul II with these vast open-air crowds. We forget. He celebrated Mass in the upper room with a handful of people, and there were no cameras there, and a few photographs were distributed afterwards.
Why was he unable to celebrate the open-air Masses at that time?
There were questions, there were issues of security even then. I mean, this is the year 2000, this is before the Twin Towers, but even so, there were very strong issues of security. There were also organizational questions about how many people could be brought to this kind of celebration. We know that for the Mass of the Joseph in the Josaphat Valley, for example, people will be invited, the busloads of pilgrims will be coming in from surrounding areas. We don't have to talk about numbers now, but we can certainly imagine there are going to be substantial numbers of people present at these celebrations.
The main aim, or one of the main aims, the Pope has said, is to strengthen the local Christian community there. It's a fairly divided Christian community. There are 13 different Christian churches and 6 Catholic communities. How do you think he can perhaps best do that?
It certainly needs strengthening, doesn't it? How do you strengthen division? How do you come into that situation? You need a strong personality, don't you? You need, to use the words of John the 23rd, you need to look for what unites us rather than what divides us. You stress the points of unity rather than the points of division. But you also need a strong personality. You need someone who's going to bring this all together. Looking over the trip, just sort of bits and pieces, I mean, you know that I'm quirky about these things, and there's some wonderful symbols in this trip that we're going to be seeing. And one of the things that hits me now, even as I prepare for it, don't laugh, but rocks and stones.
It's very much part of the Holy Land. They call themselves the living rocks, the living stones.
I don't believe in coincidence, you see. I believe in the value of symbols, and I believe there are wonderful connections to be made. The rocks and stones. He's going to be at the Dome of the Rock. And you have the stone at the center of the Dome of the Rock, which the Jews believe was the stone on which Abraham prepared to sacrifice his son Isaac. They believe it was the Holy of Holies in the Temple of Solomon. The Muslims believe it was the rock from which Muhammad was ascended into heaven. You have the Pope putting his prayer card into the wall, into the stones of the wall. You have him blessing several stones, the cornerstones for different churches that are going to be built. So it's not just the ancient stones, the stones of the past. It's the stones of the future, of churches that are moving into the future. And then you have him, the successor of Peter, Petros, the rock. What is the purpose of a rock? You cling to a rock in times of difficulty, don't you? And there he is, the living rock, in amidst these stones of the past and these stones of the future.
Thanks there to Sean Patrick Lovett, who will be reporting for us throughout this papal journey to the Holy Land.